I'm living a movie, not living by rules. It's just a movie, don't lose your cool.
Konnichiwa, and welcome to another episode of Spoiled Movie Reviews on the Blackout Who Tips premium network for all my movie enthusiasts. I am reviewing another movie, not by myself. I always have a co-host here. Today's co-host is Monica from Cinema Fix, podcast that you can find on filmgeekradio.com or iTunes and Stitcher. And she's also on Twitter and Tumblr at mcastymovies. How you doing, Monica?
Well, how are you?
Great, great. I'm glad you could be here. Today's movie that we'll be talking about is Rush. Everybody knows, but you know, in case you don't know, here's your final and only warning. This is a podcast for people who have seen the movie, don't ever plan on seeing the movie, or just don't care about spoilers, because we pretty much spoil everything. And Chris Hemsworth dies, guys. He dies after the credits in this movie. Like, he doesn't grow old at all. And
he's forever young.
Mm-hmm. And Daniel Brühl gets his face fucked up and his thighs, like, part of his face at the end of this joint. So let's go ahead and talk about this movie. Rush is basically a 1970s rivalry between two Formula One racers that really pushes, they push each other to the edge of death in order to win. It's based on a true story. And, it's directed by Ron Howard. So how could it possibly go wrong? Let's see how, by talking about it in this review. First things first, what worked for you, Monica?
I think Ron Howard can tell a hell of a story. He's really good at playing with his audience. I like the actors as well. I like the actors as well. Daniel Brühl and Chris Hemsworth made me believe in this rivalry between them. And I'm the kind of person that when I hear Formula One, I think, oh, yeah, like NASCAR. And, of course, you know, every European shakes their head. I got very interested in the sport that I know next to nothing about. So full commendations on that.
Mm-hmm. I thought that the storyteller was great. A lot of the camera angles are great in this.
Huge cinematography.
One of my favorite camera angles in this is the second time that they race in the rain. Mm-hmm. For the final, like, racing scene with takes place in Japan.
Yeah.
There's this top down scene where they show, like, the drivers in their cars, and then they're surrounded by all this rain and these people in dark clothes with dark umbrellas, and you're watching it from the top. And it kind of fit when they brought up earlier that a race car is just big enough to be a casket, because it felt like a funeral. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, that looks so, like, poignant. And, like, Ron Howard was able to deliver the feeling of impending death and doom, and, like, the on the edge of your seat, this could all go wrong.
And that's the one that he pulls out of, right? The world's character.
Mm-hmm. They actually do not die in the actual
racing,
movie. But like, that in that last movie, because I did not know the actual history of this rivalry, I was like, so this dude must die in the last race because he didn't quit. Okay, cool. I guess I'm just going to watch this guy go out here and kill himself to win this title. And that was very much how it felt to me. And I feel like only a great director can pull that out of a movie like this, where, you know, after the movie was over, I was like, oh, yeah, obviously they wouldn't have just killed the motherfucker. Who would even write that story and make a movie out of it? That's really anticlimactic in real life. I thought Chris Hemsworth's performance is great as James Hunt, the womanizing, out of control party boy. It really hit home, and I liked the darker part of him when they showed his when he wasn't able to drive and his marriage fell apart, and all of that stuff. I actually enjoyed the, you know, the subtle role switches with him and Daniel Brühl or Niki Lauda in this movie, where even with Niki, he was like kind of seen as a dark, brooding loner type, mm-hmm. which he never truly changes, but he does have these moments of like sentimentality and openness and you know, some
vulnerability,
right? Yeah. And it felt kind of good to watch them play with that, you know, because mm-hmm. I believe in the very beginning you kind of most of the audience probably goes, yeah, Chris Hemsworth is the good guy and this dude's a dick, the end, you know.
Yeah.
But by the end I had such respect for the character of Niki Lauda. Like, I actually was team Niki Lauda by the end, because I understood his point, and I actually liked his life of small but genuine, you know.
And it feels like his character goes through more of a like story arc than Chris Hemsworth's character.
Yeah, you can almost tell,
like a playboy who gets sad.
Yeah, you can almost tell who like lived to do this movie and who died, you know, because his character was more fleshed out and a little more sympathetic and nuanced to some extent, where Chris Hemsworth's story was very, and maybe because of the nature of the person, but it's very surface.
Yeah, it could be too. And I think, I mean, Daniel Brühl's having a bit of a year already. I mean, not that anyone saw the WikiLeaks movie, but he's in that too.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet. Is that
don't worry, not a lot of people have.
Is that the one, the fifth, what you call him, or
the
fifth estate?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, well now I kind of do want to see it. I didn't know he was in that. Olivia Wilde was in this, not ruining it, which is cool, because she has a very bad habit of being in movies and then the movies are terrible. So and not because of her fault, she takes this role seriously, but she's got bad luck, man. Like, Olivia Wilde being in movies, you're like, oh no, it's gonna suck now. So I'm glad, I was happy for her. The lady Alexandra Maria Lara, who played Marlene Lauda,
mm-hmm.
that was, I enjoyed her too in this movie, especially like the scenes where Niki Lauda is trying to get back in that race car after his horrible accident.
Can we talk about those hospital scenes?
Yes, let's talk about
those. Were devastating, man.
Whew, man, talk about an advertiser for healthcare. Am I right?
Yeah, I am never going over 60 miles per hour.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, and this is another credit to Ron Howard. His ability to deliver the sexiness of driving fast and speed and the fun almost, mm-hmm. even for Niki Lauda's character, when Marlene like challenges his manhood basically in front of these two guys and like, well, why don't you drive this car fast? You know, you're supposed to be some type of racer or whatever. He's like, mm-hmm. why would I do that? And she kind of was like, 'cause I want to. And he's like, you always get what you want. And it's like, all right, I'll drive fast for you, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a, he's in his element, so it's hot moment, you know? Like, oh, I'm seeing him in a different light now. Look at this guy.
Yeah.
You know? And juxtapose that with the hospital. Oh.
It is so devastating, because you see him go through that change, and then this is a huge setback for him.
Yes.
Not just professionally, career-wise, physically, emotionally, mm-hmm. like, again, that relationship with his wife, she stands by his side as he like tries to get back into the race.
Yes.
And you know, there's a part of me that's like, would I do that? I'd probably be like, you crazy, bye.
Right. Let your face heal. You need to live with that for the rest of your life. And especially like, there's almost this weird code, like a samurai, when it comes to these, you know, these race car drivers that are living on the edge. And he says at one point flat out, he's worried because he's happy for the first time and happiness is the enemy. You know, he says this to his wife after they get married.
That's so German.
It really is. For real.
That's it. One thing I kept thinking about while watching this movie is like, man, he is playing quite the German stereotype.
Yeah. Even as he's like staring out of the window into the night, in the middle of the night, brooding, you know, after sex. I was like, it could not be more. I think he's like Austrian in the film or something,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It don't matter. Nah, it was very German.
It's close enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Germanic.
His accent was the shit too in this movie. I love how they talk to each other. He's like, asshole. That was good.
The shit talk was funny.
It was so good. Yeah, they have several scenes between him and Chris Hemsworth where they go back and forth, talking shit, and that's great. And also, a lot of Niki Lauda's, interactions with other characters in the film is great because it's so awkward and straightforward and just no regard for human emotion. Just talk to people yeah. like they are objects, and it's beautiful. So I enjoyed all that. I'm trying to think, is there anything else that, cinematography, the racing scenes, couldn't understand all the stuff with racing. I felt like for the purposes of the movie, they had to simplify it down, but they worked, you know, they, you know, they're not in the cars long anyway. So,
we're not watching all 500, 300 laps.
Right.
Of the race.
It actually made me feel like, I don't know how you felt, but at the end of the movie, I felt like I could watch Formula One as long as they simplify down to 2 to 3 dramatic moments. And it takes 2 minutes.
Highlights. So we got as far as like Euro ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could definitely watch some, and then he passed them. Oh, okay. And the reason that's significant is because his wife slept with this other guy one time. But, that I was cool with all that. I guess we need to talk about what we didn't like, which it's probably going to be a little bit shorter, but what did you not like about this movie?
At certain times, it just felt a little too dramatic. Like when Chris Hemsworth's character, wow, I'm totally blanking out his name, but his
character.
James Hunt? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. We got Niki Lauda.
Yeah.
Forget the other guy. But his character, he goes over and he punches a reporter, like, to defend Nikki's honor, and I thought that was just a little like too cheesy.
It was one of those moments.
I understand this is like some code of chivalry or whatever, but
and it's one of those it's one of those moments that is so corny you need them to flash on the screen like this is still a real story so I can know that happened. Because if it didn't, then I'm like, why the fuck is this in the movie? And if
apparently it didn't, or like, there's no record of it or whatnot. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, if it didn't happen, I wish they wouldn't have put that in there because it felt a little too over the top. It's like, he apologized. Also, I forgot to mention the apology scene was so great to me because like, you can tell that he's getting more serious and he's trying to work up the nerve. He goes over and he apologizes to Niki for being like, you were right. We shouldn't have raced in those terrible conditions. And I feel responsible. And Nikki's like, you are. And, I was right. But, if it wasn't for you winning those races and stuff, I would not have recovered. I would not have fought for my life, because I would watch you win races and just think about getting on the field, getting back in the car. And I was like, okay. You know, I mean, for Nikki, that's a step in the right direction. It's as good as a thank you you're going to get from. Yeah. He's like, if you're responsible for my wreck, then you're equally responsible for my recovery. And that moment actually worked for me without breaking either character into just like these corny, like, hug it out, bro, stereotypes.
Yeah, yeah. Tears, manly tears.
Yeah, it was very manly when they walked away. That worked. Let me think. What didn't work? It did feel like a sports movie. And if you
I don't
know
think
what I
mean. There's any escaping that though.
Yeah. So if you're not into sports movie cliches.
But here's my thing is like, mm-hmm. I'm not into sports movies. I'm totally the anti sports movie person. Mm-hmm. And then I actually had fun with this because it's more about the rivalry.
Right.
More so than about sports.
Right.
So I'm okay with that.
Yeah. All sports movies strive to be, about the rivalry or the characters off the field and stuff. I say most do not succeed in that, you know?
They fall in love with shooting the action scenes, which could be, you know, a high school basketball game. So
right.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's a very, very, stealthily crafted sports movie. Cause like I said, I forgot it was a sports movie, but you know, and when, like I said, when it ended, I
forgot
like,
when it's in the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. And when it ends, I kind of was like, oh yeah, yes, it is a sports movie. You know, but it's after the credits, you know, that I came to this conclusion. So they kind of trick you, you know, you're like, oh, you got me. But, yeah. You made me enjoy a movie where I knew what was going to happen, kind of feeling. What was the other thing?
Is that feeling where it's like, I knew this was going to be the end, but I liked it.
Yeah. You know what's crazy? I even knew without knowing any of the story. I was like, that dude Chris Hemsworth character, no way that dude lives like forever. Like, that dude is dead. Like, people, they don't make
his hair is too shiny, he must die.
They don't make people like that live past 60. Like, you just don't get to be that kind
of. To be fair, he lived out to be like a TV host for like a couple years, and then he went out.
Yeah, he lived to like 45, but it was like, as they were showing the ending like credits, I was like, that motherfucker dead, dog. And I knew Nikki was alive. Like, I was like, he play it safe. I don't care. Even with him getting in a car with a 20% chance of dying every day, I felt like he would live forever. So, it was very, so they do a good job of confusing you during the movie though, because during the damn movie, I was like, Chris Hemsworth is going to die in a ball of fire. He should have, he should have stayed his ass out of that car in that rain where he could not see shit.
Yeah, no, this. Oh man, that one scene when they tried to like drill a hole into the helmet. No, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
That was creepy. But I was gonna say, the other thing that I would have done completely without was that weird ass voiceover at the beginning. Cause it like, it doesn't come in at another point in the movie until the very end where Niki Lauda's voice comes in to say what happened. But at the beginning, it's both, Niki and James.
Yes.
Talk. And I couldn't tell one from the other at one at certain points.
Yeah, and Nikki's accent,
I got it from like the accent, but that's about it. Like, it's kind of disorienting.
And Nikki's accent is a acquired taste. Like, it takes a while to get adjusted to it in the movie. So yeah, starting with that, you kind of are off put, like, what is he saying? And oh, the other thing that they didn't do, and I don't know that they should have, but I just want to mention it and maybe even get your thoughts on it, but they don't really set up any other characters to have any impact on the race. So in the final scene, I guess they're just banking on, if you went to see this movie, you understand that Mario Andretti is a motherfucking legend. Because they just
That was the one name I knew. I was so proud.
Okay, so maybe they just kind of tested it and they realized we don't need someone to actually play this character or to introduce what an impact he's going to have at some point. Because when they bring him up, in my mind, I was like, wait, isn't Mario Andretti a bad motherfucker? And then it's like, why are why are we only learning of his presence on the circuit in the final race? And
maybe
it was,
is that kind of thing is what's coming up next. Maybe there's a rush too.
Oh my God. Don't tease me like this. but I felt like they just, like it wouldn't have taken but maybe 3 or 4 minutes of film time to like kind of be like a little foreshadowing of, you know, this Mario Andretti guy's a beast.
You can find that out on your own for Formula One. I think the most important thing of this movie was the rivalry between those two guys, and everybody else be damned. And apparently it was like, had a lot more to do with the marketing of it. Like, they got along afterwards. And you kind of see that in the movie too. So it wasn't like they hated each other's guts and they wished each other dead. You know, it wasn't like a terrible, horrible relationship or anything.
Well, here's what's weird, right? Like, for me, when Niki Lauda drops out of the race, I feel like he won in life because he learned a lesson.
He did win in life.
But it also, it feels like his story arc wasn't about winning a championship. It was really about learning to understand that he had something to lose. He had become happy with, despite his not wanting to. He had any, you know, he had someone else to care about, and there kind of was something bigger than winning this fucking race, you know? And I feel like, I can't speak for everybody, but for me, the movie could have literally ended right there. I didn't even need to know the outcome of the race, because I was rooting for Niki at that point, and I was like, okay, obviously this is the, like, it doesn't matter who wins the race at this point. It can't get any better for Niki than this. And I had kind of given up on rooting for James Hunt that much, as a character. So, in order to keep me engaged in the final part of that race, it would have been a little bit better if I knew, like, Mario Andretti was more of a threat. Like, if it could have been like, well, if Mario Andretti wins this, he, you know, like, or Mario Andretti's come in second all these times that Niki Lauda was in the hospital or something, where I'm like, oh, this guy's a threat too. Like, now he's in the lead. This shit's even, there's more to go here, you know, but, it's a very small complaint, in a very good movie. So you know, don't guys.
It still makes it still kind of makes sense because his score was up because even when he's on the sideline, he regrets doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, I should be out there, but I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. He does.
And then his wife is the one that's like, you made the right choice, you mm-hmm. know, sort of thing.
Oh, and the other thing that was weird, the worst plot twist, ever, or worst, like, weird, like, cliffhanger part ever, did he come in fifth or third?
Mm-hmm.
Weren't you kind of just like, well, if he was the third card across, he would be in third. And if he was the fifth card across, by counting the cards, he would be in fifth. So, and
I think it was like a points thing, right? That was the whole drama.
It was in that race who finished what order.
Yeah.
It would have been different if it would have been like a photo finish.
Yeah.
You know, where it was like, oh, these three cards are so close. Did he pull it off or did he not? But it was just like someone got confused and was like, I think he came in fifth. It's like, no, he came in third. Hey, yeah. James, you came in third. Oh, all right. I came in third. I won. So that was a little weird. Let's give it our ratings from 0 to 5 here on the More Epic Than Love Jones scale. Monica, what would you give this movie on the 0 to 5 on the More Epic Than Love Jones scale?
Ooh, tough. Probably a 3 or a 4.
Okay. 3 or 4.
It's not like super necessary to see it in a big screen, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it's something that if I come across again on an airplane or something, I'll probably watch it again.
Okay.
I liked it.
Go ahead.
No, okay. it's a well-made movie. It's not an incredible movie. It's not like it'll blow you away or anything like that, but it's good for what it, you know, for a sports movie. I think it's really good for a sports movie.
So that's either 5 AMC Before Noon Special Matinee or
yeah.
4, which is full price opening weekend. And you're kind of going in between those. So I'll say like a 3.5 or so.
Yeah.
All right. I will give it a 4, man. I didn't think I liked this movie at all. I don't like racing. I think that shit's boring. But I enjoyed it in the context of this movie. And I thought, it's worth seeing for, the storytelling, and it's worth seeing for, Daniel Brühl or Brühl. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's worth seeing for him and how the story crafts it where you come around on his character. It's really well done.
It's kind of like a baby Christoph Waltz.
He is. A little adorable Christoph Waltz that looks kind of like a rat. Throughout the movie, it was fun, man. Like you'll enjoy it, and it's well done. I will say you don't have to see it in theater, you know, because that was one of the, I would say, weak spots of the movie, is that with these cars and this, like, this medium, you almost expect it to be a very, like, oh man, the race, that just like an ode to these cars and fast racing and craziness. And it really doesn't like embellish too much on the, it's not like I would say the racing scenes in Need for Speed are more of a, you know, masturbatory experience for car lovers than this.
Or just like even the last Fast and Furious was still it's still really impressive cinematography wise. He does some new things with it, but it doesn't like blow you away.
Right. So if you caught this, you know, on the couch, you wouldn't be missing out on too much. You still would enjoy it because, like Monica said, the, out of the car character experiences are well worth it. So yeah, that's our rating here at Spoiled Movie Reviews. Thank you guys for, listening. Don't forget to check out Monica M. Casty Movies on Twitter and Tumblr. Check out her podcast that she co-hosts with Andrew, Cinema Fix, filmgeekradio.com, and you can find that on iTunes and Stitcher also. So until next time, peace out, guys.
Get your act together. My life's a movie. I leave you in that act forever.
Life's like a movie. My life's like a movie. My life's like a movie.